Welcome to Season 3 of the Leadership Educator Podcast, your source for knowledge and expertise on facilitating leadership learning. Are you passionate about leadership education? Do you want to expand your resource toolbox with practical strategies for teaching, learning, and program design? Well, this is the podcast for you. If you haven't done so already, please hit subscribe so that you'll never miss an episode.
Well, hello and welcome to the Leadership Educator Podcast. My name is Dan Jenkins, and I'm Chair and Associate Professor of Leadership and Organizational Studies at the University of Southern Maine.
And I am Lauren Bullock, Assistant Professor of Instruction at Temple University, and we are both so eager for this episode of the Leadership Educator Podcast.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a fun one. So we've been talking a lot with our peers and our colleagues, and certainly our students are interested in, hey, we've got this 2020 election going on. I don't know if you've heard. And so how might we be able to, or what are some strategies for integrating some of the content around politics and the elections and candidates and the campaigns into our leadership studies courses and programs? You know, one of the things that I did over the summer was taught a special topics course on leadership in the 2020 elections. And I had been wanting to teach a course on the leadership of Donald J. Trump. And we had like some pop-up course opportunities. There were some funds from a grant that our university got where we could do these one credit pop-up courses in the middle of a semester, and just never really got around to doing it. And then I got an email from someone who I work with quite a bit on a variety of different projects. She works as faculty in our political science program, Dr. Libby Bischoff, and she just became our director of our Osher map library, which didn't know this when I got to USM, but USM has, we got the gift of this huge map library, and it has maps going back to, you know, Christopher Columbus and Pilgrims and like early drawings of New England. And they do great programming. And I've seen some of these archive maps and they're super cool. In fact, they did a visit for targeted to like K through five last fall, maybe. I want to say it was definitely last year, but I brought my youngest daughter. She was 8 or 9 at the time, and she had a blast. They did scavenger hunts and got to look at all these old maps. And
That's awesome.
And so the idea was, okay, so you will, in order to get this grant, you'll teach a class sometime during the 2020s at some point, and then, but you need to in order to get this grant money, you need to utilize the Osher map library collection. And I thought, oh, well, there's so many opportunities to integrate political maps, electoral college maps, like all these, you know, voter maps, and, you know, just from current to historical. And we had all these great ideas. In fact, I think they even acquired a couple of maps for my class, and then COVID. And so we ended up, I worked closely with Libby, and we actually ended up finding some great things that had been digitized. And I think it really came off really well. And we're able to look at some historical maps that were really, really, really cool information. We also got to, you know, look at, and some of these national political maps went back to like the election of like 1856. There were maps on, there was this one called like Old Honesty Nonpartisan Political Map showing the presidential vote of like 1880. There were just all kinds of really, really cool historical maps. So, you know, really was great for students to take the time to compare and contrast, you know, what were some things that happened historically when you look at election statistics and which parties or that different candidates or different parts of the country geographically may have leaned toward versus today, as well as like what social and media and other types of industries and interest groups were donating or were putting out some of this information. You know, like this one that I just talked about, Old Honesty Nonpartisan Political Map. Well, fun fact, Old Honesty is a tobacco company, you know, and so there's just like some really interesting things that are associated with this.
That's such an interesting intersection. You know, we think about corporations and their involvement in our elections as a present day thing. And here these maps are saying, oh no, they go back, that tactic goes back a few hundred years. Yeah. I also think it's cool how, so one of the things that we hear constantly is experiential learning or just using images to illustrate our points. And just the fact that you have those old historical maps and you're able to bring them into present day and there's some kind of context for it in your class is so, I'm sure, meaningful to the learning experience. So yeah. So wait, continue. You're saying that you used the course. Like, what kind of activities did you do with your class, or like, what kind of discussions did you have with your class?
Yeah. So this was one that, you know, I think it would have been really interesting had I been able to have done it face to face or like web mm-hmm. synchronous online, but I designed the course as a fully asynchronous online. So there weren't any class meetings, which I was, you know, kind of on the fence about, but it turned out to be a really wise decision, I think, because of mm-hmm. what went down. And, you know, the focus of the course was partly content around campaigns and elections. So the mm-hmm. primary text that we used was actually a political science. So it's a book by Medvitt called Campaigns and Elections that came out in 2018. And I thought it did a really, really good job of just going, you know, week by week through like, what are campaigns and elections? Like, what are some of the rules and regulations around like becoming a candidate and running an election, being in a campaign, political parties, interest groups, the media, you know, and then like, actually facilitating a race and how voters and campaigns play into that whole process. And so my background is my master's was in political science. And so my first job out of college was working at the State House Appropriations Committee in Tallahassee, Florida, and worked on a few gubernatorial campaigns as well as a couple school board campaigns. And so was very interned for a U.S. senator when I was at Florida State. And then currently I'm a town councilor in the town of Brunswick up in the mid-coast of Maine. And so always enjoyed that part of the world and citizenship and taught political science courses. That was my first teaching opportunities at community colleges. I taught intro to political science, American government, state and local government. So had that background. And I'm not saying that anybody couldn't teach this class or integrate things from this class into mm-hmm. into their leadership studies courses, but that was something that I also brought to the table. And so it was this kind of fusion of, okay, like what is a good leader and candidate, or mm-hmm. what types mm-hmm. of things do these campaigns portray their candidates doing at the local level, regional level, national politics. And it was Western, like we were focused on the U.S., like no buns about that. Wanting, you know, really getting students to look at the rhetoric of candidates, their platforms, their press statements, like what type of messaging do they put out there, which I know you'll love, Lauren, with your comm background. Yes. But also too, like, you know, with the current events and crises and other things, like how are candidates and incumbents like responding to these things? So like we had so much news available to us, and the timing of the course was really interesting. While the fall right now would be a really interesting time too to teach it. But over the summer we had, you know, the emergence of this global crisis, the pandemic, and we had the U.S. Going through civil unrest, and we had a lot of primary mm-hmm. elections going on at the same time. And so the way that I parceled up the course was they would look at the U.S. Presidential race. So that was like a no-brainer, like, hey, we're going to start looking at that one throughout the entire, and it was pretty clear then, even though the conventions hadn't happened, that it was going to be Trump versus Biden. We mm-hmm, just didn't know mm-hmm. who the vice presidential candidate was going to be for the Democratic Party. So they started looking at that right off the bat. Then we just happened to be in Maine, where there's a slightly heated, I don't know if you've heard of Susan Collins, U.S. Senate race. So that is getting a lot of attention in Maine. So that's a fun one to look at. We got to watch the Democratic primary unfold, and then they started to focus in on Sarah Gideon and Susan Collins' race. And then we did not have a gubernatorial race, so I had them look at Montana and North Carolina, which had two pretty heated gubernatorial races, so that they could get a sense of what were some of the major issues that were at play as we're looking at these candidates and their campaigns through a leadership lens throughout these three levels of government.
You know, it's so clear that this is a passion project of yours and that you got so much excitement out of it. And I love that you share this like really intense level of involvement, as well as a very bipartisan. So it seems like you're trying to be all encompassing and focus on processes and pull examples from what's happening now instead of leaning one way or the other way. I also like that you said, I have this master's in political science. So this is definitely something of interest, because there are people like me who are, our masters are in our athletics and our background is in communication, and we may not know, but still may want to do. Like I had, in my class the other day, we were talking about the traits approach, and we got into the motivation to lead scale. And so we were talking about politicians, and my students were just convinced that new politicians were more in the social normative space, where they wanted to serve and be of service to their community. And they were convinced that experienced politicians wanted affective and they wanted to dominate people, which I thought was such an right. I thought it was so interesting, because we hear politicians consistently say, I'm here to serve people. I'm here to serve the people. And my students were like, no, we're not buying it. You may start out that way, but you eventually, after experience in it, you get to that space. But I thought it was like an interesting way to kind of sneak politics into the conversation and then tie in some of the work we had done around values and purpose and kind of what we thought their values and purpose were. So I think both your full class on it and maybe this activity could provide people some insight into how they can integrate politics into their leadership. You started to share a couple of resources. What other resources do you have for us? Or are there traditional leadership resources that can be used in this conversation?
Yeah, definitely. Before I definitely want to share kind of how I structured the course. So you had me thinking about, there's this classic tripartite model of representation in political science. So there's the delegate, the trustee, and the politico. And so the delegate is someone who says, hey, I'm elected to represent and convey the views of others. The trustee is someone who acts on behalf of others and uses their knowledge and experience, intelligence, you know, upon a certain field, you know. And then you have this like political model where, like, rarely consistently acting as just a delegate or just a trustee. It's kind of like a hybrid. And so sometimes, you know, you assume, hey, a candidate's going to be a servant leader, you know, or a politician. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're out there for their own interests, you know. And so these, you have these two different types of models of representation that come out, which makes me think, I don't know if I actually integrated that into this class, but that's something that definitely I could have and definitely would have came up through our conversation. So I structured the class through, we had different modules, you know, it was a 15-week or 14-week summer class. And through each of these like six modules, they went through different chapters of the book and responded to some different learning activities and role play exercises and case studies around campaigns and elections, while also diving into some classic leadership texts and readings. So for example, I would pair like classic leadership theories and readings from like the Nordhaus and practice, or Wren, The Leader's Companion, or you know, some other like classic Harvard Business Review articles, I try to keep the reading like reasonable. It was also cross-listed between undergraduate and graduate students. So I had a mix of both, but we would look at things like, okay, like, here is, you know, Joe Biden, the candidate, or Donald Trump, the incumbent, or, you know, Susan Collins, the incumbent, you know, and so, but let's look at like, what are some of their behaviors, skills, traits, communication. And so then at the same time, they would read portions of the skills approach, trait approach, behavioral approach, like, you know, classic readings on like communication and leadership. There's a great reading in the Wren text about leadership and democracy, you know, and so getting them to think about, okay, what are the most important traits that some of these candidates may need to have, but also like, is democracy something that all leaders should do? Does it matter if you're a political leader? Like, do other things need to be more important? You know, I think recently with that book, Rage, coming out about the interviews, Woodward, doing you know, the interviews that he had done with Trump and asking him about how Trump had downplayed the threat of the coronavirus in, I guess, February. And his response was something about leadership being about confidence. You know, I wish I could go back and ask my students, like, well, is confidence the most important trait of a president, or, you know, are there other things? Yeah. And we did. We talked about ethics. We talked about the ethics of different decisions around, Biden was shown publicly wearing a mask earlier in the media than Trump was. And so I had students discuss those types of things. We talked about racism. We talked about voter suppression. We talked about school reopenings, particularly at the gubernatorial level. And so there was just so many decisions that political leaders had to make, and candidates had to say, here's my position on this, over the summer, that integrated so well with a lot of the classic leadership theories and concepts. I mean, you could use, your options are endless, but surely you do need a lot of structure.
And you bring up so many good points about how this what's happening right now almost is a gift for leadership educators, because mm-hmm. we talk a lot about learning and leadership and how it's parallel. It's important at every level that you have that. And we're getting a really good history lesson right now. I can guarantee you, like, for example, Kanye West keeps showing up in these, keeps putting in applications to be added to ballots. And we're now kind of learning what that system takes. Like, he had X number of signatures, some of them were fake, you know, and so we're getting into a lot of the process work that I don't think we would have gotten into before with such wide, a large, just so many people just interested in this, right? And so yeah. I love that you're sharing like how all of these are just connecting to constructs we've been talking about for years. Especially those are the things that we're taught as teachers, or we learn as instructors, are what makes this stuff stick with students, right? And it's right. You hate to say like it's perfect, but it's just a great opportunity to really push the learning, because we're seeing two people with different value systems, different leadership styles, and both are being supported by their bases. It's almost seemingly equally being supported by their bases. So again, I'm going to ask you, what other resources do you have? Like, you talked about Nordhaus and Wren, but like, what are some other sources people can go to if they want to start to integrate this into their classes?
Yeah, I came across, I mean, not only looking at what are some syllabi from other courses and programs around the country, but also learning about what was some of the literature that had been written about leadership and politics. There mm-hmm. were three particular compilations that I came across, and one of those was a recently published book. But there's the Oxford Handbook of Political Leadership. That was a great resource with just yes. all kinds of great readings. There was this collection of, it was called The Art of Political Leadership, a collection of essays. That mm-hmm. was fantastic. You can definitely Google and find that one. And then Doris Kearns Goodwin wrote a book that came out last year called Leadership in Turbulent Times that actually looked at different crises that presidents had to facilitate over the course of the last, I want to say it's, she spanned all U.S. presidents, at least the, you know, since George Washington, and just great lessons about handling the civil rights movement, around facilitating the Industrial Revolution, around different world wars and the Civil War. And it was just fantastic to kind of juxtapose some of the things that prior presidents had to deal with versus some of the things that our current candidates are trying to make statements on and make decisions around. There's two great TED Talks. There's a TED Ed lesson that explains the Electoral College. There's Jonathan Haidt's, his TED Talk around the roots of liberals and conservatives, you know, having students think about the role of political leaders and bringing folks together versus polarization. We also used another part of the special collection we had at my university had some political buttons from the last 30 or 40 years, and had students look at some of the campaign messaging and propaganda over you know, a period of time versus some of the campaign messaging that you're looking at now. Another great thing to have your students look at is have them look at major candidates' web pages. Like, what's their platform? What are some of the things that they have at the very, very front of their messaging on their web pages? There were some really interesting finds for sure. I think the Trump campaign had put up a quiz about how to. Oh, gosh, I don't want to misrepresent this.
That's such an interesting. Well, so while you're thinking about that, it makes me think of the Philly. In Philly, I went to. There's a museum that's right across from City Hall, from where the Liberty Bell is. I feel bad because I've been in Philadelphia forever and I should know the name of the convention. Not the convention and visitors. Anyway, so there's this great space, museum space in Philadelphia. And they, 4 years ago, 8 years ago, in 2012, they did a museum exhibit where you could go and learn the history of presidential elections and presidents. And they have a station where you could take a quiz to see who you should vote for. And when you just said that Trump had a quiz, it reminded me of that station, because at the time, I think whatever I responded, it said that I should vote for Bush. And I just, full disclosure, I'm a Democrat. I am a Democrat, although I vote depending on my values or my, the platforms that the candidates are sharing. But I was surprised, because I was like, okay, but I normally I would be a Democrat and vote Democrat. And this thing, this quiz is telling me I should vote Republican. So I just found that really interesting when you shared that Trump quiz. As so, you're finding the quiz.
Yeah. No, I found it. I had to go back through the discussion boards. And so this is what it was called on the website. So it's donaldjtrump.com/landing/ I guess it's 2020 Trump versus Democrats poll. And the first question is, who would you rather see fix our nation's shattered immigration policies, President Trump or an MS-13 loving Democrat? So that's the first question and the two options that you have. And so it's interesting. One of the questions is, or there are a lot of questions where your two options are President Trump or a lying Democrat. And so it's very, very polarizing the way that the quiz is portrayed. And so what I actually had students do, one of my favorite essays ever written was George Orwell's Politics in the English Language. Mm-hmm. It is just a great, great read because it focuses on the way that the English language is structured and how through the use of language and through the through using very vague presentations of the language or, you know, you can very easily create some bias in your prose. And so it's like, you know, there's this great excerpt Orwell says, you know, as soon as certain topics are raised, the concrete melts into the abstract and no one seems able to think of turns of speech that are not hackneyed. Prose consists less and less of words chosen for the sake of their meaning and more of phrases tacked together like sections of prefabricated hen house. And so it's just an interesting approach to what are some of the messages that are being put out by the different campaigns and how are we using language as a tactic or what have you in order to influence voters one way or the other.
Yeah. I love that. And that's so well, like that dovetails right into my backyard in communications because I teach in a public relations major. We have four leadership classes within our major. And one of the things I introduce in my class is the public leaders concept. So more than just your government officials, it's CEOs of companies and kind of what makes them public leaders. And so one of the things that we talk about regularly is public speaking within that public leaders platform. So when you're talking about the language and the details and the words they select, they're such intentional pieces, you know, designed to get to trigger or to reach people. So as long as people hear their favorite keyword, you know, they don't really care what the rest of the message says. They know that they connected with that word or that phrase and they're now on board. And I think we've seen it work so well the last year or so since we really got into preparing for this election, but my students are fascinated to find out that this is all intentional. And I'm like, well, as future PR pros, like you will be crafting these messages. This is going to be a part of your job. I also, in that public leaders class, we talk about, you know, how government officials, CEOs are all engaged in PR activities. And I think in that lesson is where students kind of, the light bulb turns on like, aha, like, okay, now I see really why these leadership courses matter to our program. I didn't get it before. I just thought I was signing up for PR, but now I get it. Like we're helping craft the language that our leaders are going to go out and share. And we have to know what they mean and how to craft it in a way to get buy-in into a way that people believe the leaders that are sharing these messages.
Yeah, for sure. And not only the messages that they're putting out there, but what is the vision of their campaign? What is the message or the mission of their campaign? And so thinking of political campaigns as organizations and how are they doing a good job of portraying their mission to their, you know, the people that are not only a part of the campaign or people that are affiliated with the same political party as their candidate, but also organizationally, how are they functioning and how are they able to make sure that what the candidate is saying publicly aligns with what the campaign is saying publicly. Yes. And that can be easier said than done depending on your political candidate. Yeah. My daughter and I are watching The Tiger King right now. And I know we're a little late to the game. I started watching it when it first came out. I think I watched the first one and I was like, I don't know. Maybe, I mean, I get it, but like, I don't know if I want to spend any time on this. But now my daughter like is like, just real, like we just watch it and laugh. And I hadn't realized that he had run for governor
amongst in other Oklahoma. Things.
Yeah, amongst other things. You know, this Joe Exotic character, and you know, listening to the campaign leader that had worked with him talk about like how horrible that experience was. And so I was thinking back to, you know, some of the campaigns that I had worked on, and just again, how, you know, trying to manage whatever the message was of that campaign with, you know, the personality that Joe Exotic was. To return back to the course though, so I mentioned we had these assignments that would be based around every module. There was also three different discussion forums. And so one focused on the US presidential race, another on the US Senate race, and then the other on the gubernatorial races. And so that was, you know, about 90% of the course was focused on those four areas. And then they had to do one final reflection that just because of timing was associated with the Democratic National Convention. So they would watch a little bit of that. They had to focus on one particular speech, one particular speaker that had to be, you know, a high level speaker, and analyze some of the rhetoric of that particular speech, and then integrate things they had learned over the course of the semester. I wanted to include both conventions, but things got pushed back, and it wouldn't have been appropriate for me to say, hey, turn in this paper 2 weeks after the semester ends and also do the Republican convention. Although I wanted to do both. It was kind of a bummer with timing, but I wanted to give them that opportunity to come full circle and see the type of messaging that also comes from a national convention.
Yeah, that is really unfortunate. But again, it's the focus on the process and the systems and not on the parties. That's super important. You brought up something interesting though that I wanted to go back to. Were your discussion boards running discussion boards, or were they like time-based, meaning this week comment on this week comment on that? Or because it sounds like they were just running discussion boards on the different topics.
So I would certainly scan the news. There were certain things I wanted to make sure that I touched on during particular units to focus on political issues in like the first module. And then they were going to focus more on like the candidates and the campaign organizations in the second module. Going forward, they were looking more at like how do interest groups and media play in. So I would start to grab particular media, things going on in the media, and then associate it with the readings and other things that I knew that were learning goals of that particular content or that particular time in the semester. Two, communication and interaction with voters. And then towards the end of the, and I did this intentionally because I knew that Joe Biden's vice presidential pick was going to be heavily impacted by race and gender because of the statement he had made early on in the campaign about committing to picking a female running mate. And so our second to last module looked at the role of race and gender in American political leadership, and students really, really got into that one. So it was, they would have one or two discussion prompts per like module in each of those forums to respond to. So in any given week, you would usually respond to, you know, one in the presidential forum, one in the gubernatorial forum, one in the Senate forum. But some of those rolled out at different times. I had like the presidential one ran throughout the course of the entire semester. I think they started posting in some of the other ones a little bit later, just for the purposes of like, there wasn't much going on, you know, in the news for some of these primary elections until a certain point in time in the summer. And so timing is important for sure. But, you know, if you were going to, obviously you have no worry about timing now if you're going to integrate any conversation about elections in your leadership class, as we were recording this podcast, it's 50 days away. You know, just, you know, some of the things to think about is to always do your due diligence to provide, you know, both sides of any argument. While it might be painstaking for you to pull up one news source versus the other, because you may not believe in it, it is really important, you know, in my opinion, to make sure that both sides are portrayed and that you are putting that out there for your students. Certainly that was something I tried to do as a political science adjunct, was not to say, hey, my party or this party or, you know, promoting certain candidates, because really, you know, you want students to think for themselves and not think that they, you know, you're in a position of power as a faculty member or a program coordinator. And if you want students to really share how they feel about things in a safe way, it helps to not bias in one way or the other. Again, this is just my approach.
Yeah, I think you bring up some really good points. And to me, those seem like basic facilitation points, right? You want to be neutral, you want to be focused on, you know, encouraging that discussion and getting students to think and not, you know, trying to force your opinion one way or the other down anybody's throat. Like, I used to intentionally throw my students off by sharing during different points in the class, well, like, Trump does a great job at doing this. And as a woman who visibly identifies as Black, I know they were floored to hear that. But part of my role in that class is to get them to think about this very critically from multiple perspectives. And if I'm not able to demonstrate that, then it's, you know, kind of hypocritical of me to be in front of that space doing that. I mean, I can still have my personal opinions, but still effectively teach the class, right? You shared so many great resources today, and we'll put links to as many as we can in the bio. And I wrote down all of them. So Dan, you didn't even have to worry about you don't have to worry about going back. I wrote down like the TED Talk on explaining the Electoral College. I love the button assignment that you had, having them go back in and look at buttons. You'll have to tell me that the tripartite view framework again, because I don't know if my spelling is right on that. Any final closing thoughts before we end this episode?
No, I'd say, yeah, have fun. The election comes around, you know, your presidential election comes around only every 4 years. And, you know, if you just happen to have a Senate race or a highly contested gubernatorial race or a congressional race of another kind in your state or region or what have you, like, utilize it, you know, again, be with caution, but have fun with it. I can definitely say that when I was teaching political science classes, I absolutely loved being able to teach courses during an election cycle. It just made it that much more fun because you had just, it was front and center, and you could really help to educate your students on the democratic process in the United States, being good citizens, and, you know, making them more aware of the issues that are out there and making them just better consumers of political news.
Yeah, I agree. Because you never know when you have that next city councilor, town councilor, or, you know, U.S. president in your class, and you want to make sure that you're leaving them with good practices or instilling in them this pursuit of knowledge, as well as, you know, making sure they're authentic in their behavior as they move forward and look to lead the country. So thank you so much for sharing today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. That wraps up this episode of the Leadership Educator Podcast. And so one of the things that we think about as we reflect on the work we've done together, and particularly this season, is how we've been doing this podcast remotely via Zoom since the start. And some of the equipment that we looked at getting right off the bat was equipment that you would record a podcast in the same studio or live, but we knew that that wasn't going to be a luxury that we had. Who knew that, looking forward and reflecting on that this is pretty much how, you know, I mean, even The Daily Show, The Daily Social Distancing Show, everything is being recorded remotely. And so we're following suit with that, and certainly keeping our 6 feet of CDC social distance.
Absolutely.
So with that, we invite you to follow us on Twitter. So I'm at @Dr_Leadership, and Lauren is at @MrsLaurjb. That's Miss Laur JB. We encourage you to listen to the full episodes as they're released, as we can only share a fraction of the amazing stories that we share and that our guests share. You can find the episodes wherever podcasts are available. And we also encourage you to subscribe and rate us 5 stars, as the more you rate us, the easier it is for others to find us.
We would like to thank the James M. Cox Jr. Institute for Journalism, Innovation, Management, and Leadership within the Grady College of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Georgia. The support was facilitated by Dr. Keith Herndon, William S. Morris Chair in News Strategy and Management.
And our wonderful theme music was composed, performed, and mixed by Dr. Matthew White, trumpeter, composer, and educator, and he's currently the Associate Professor of Trumpet, Coordinator of Jazz and Commercial Music, and Director of Ensembles at Coastal Carolina University. You can check him out at www.mattwhitejazz.com. Matt, thanks so much for sharing your musical genius with our audience.
And finally, thank you to the Association of Leadership Educators. Check out what the ALE has to offer at leadershipeducators.org. We hope you listen, as well as share with your leadership friends.